This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 53 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. It wouldn't be right if I didn't start today's show by talking about the viral video that went around yesterday with Don LaGreca and his epic rant against football analytics. If you didn't see it, you can probably find it with a quick Google search. But I wanted to talk about some of the things that I found particularly terrible about this rant. The rant was about the Giants and their offensive line. The offensive line has been really bad, but he hates that there are metrics that talk about how bad the offensive line has been. At the start of the rant, he's sarcastically making fun of people who look at analytics by saying, only 27% of the time was Eli pressured from his left side on Monday nights when Sean McDonough's the announcer. I mean, aside from that sentence not making any sense, is this really what some people believe is happening behind the scenes with analytics? That analytically minded people who are pushing great work actually think that who's announcing a game matters? Do people really think this? I know it was an over-the-top statement to make, and he's trying to prove a point, but clearly the ignorance is showing right from the start of this rant. He then says, quote, your eyeballs tell the story, and that the offensive line sucks, period. That's my stat. That's my stat, he says. Cool, man. My stat is that you're tilting off the planet right now because you don't understand what analytics actually are. He then starts talking about the Pythagorean theorem like it's this basis of any metric that's ever been created. But then the very next quote is probably the best quote in the entire rant. When referring to people who do analytics, he says that they're, quote, the people who sit at their desk who only know the naked body through National Geographic. We live in a world where the stereotypical nerd has created basically everything that you interact with. And this dude hates them. It's like the people who get mad at the laziness of millennials on Facebook not realizing that the reason they can even do that is because a millennial created Facebook. I mean, let's be honest, stereotyping is ridiculously stupid to begin with. It's the source of a lot of the chaos that goes on in the world today. But since we're talking football in this rant here, I'm going to just focus on this particular stereotyping. The sports nerd. There's no way someone with a computer can analyze the game as well as Don LaGreca because, as he said at the end of his rant, it's football. I've been watching football for 40 years. And here's the kicker, guys. Here's the most amazing part of this entire rant, aside from that National Geographic quote. At the very end, he says, and they have not gone this long without scoring 20 points since 77-78. Wait a second. Did he just use a statistic to try and prove his point? Did he just get that statistic from someone who's only seen a naked body through National Geographic? Because I can guarantee you that he did not find that statistic on his own. Because Don LaGreca still doesn't use the internet. There's no way he's searching for that. This rant about analytics in the Giants' offensive line is just another example of why people are rejecting what the Browns are doing in the NFL. And it's another example showing that there are people out there who simply reject more information, even when that information is incredibly insightful, because they themselves don't understand the information. That, to me, is where these things stem from. That's where these rants come from. Any thought leader isn't happy when something new happens in their field and they're not on top of it. Jealousy is a real thing. You unfortunately see it in the fantasy football industry, too. There are analysts who trash a certain process or methodology because they believe their process is the best. They often don't embrace the new information that's out there because it's additional work. It's something that they don't have access to, or it's something they can't fully comprehend. And that's real with any industry, you guys. I'm sure each of you listening to this has gone to work and there's a dude who rejects new ideas because he's completely stuck in his ways. That's everywhere. You see that everywhere. Rants like this one remind us that, yes, it's kind of unfortunate and sad that people think this way, and they think that way for selfish reasons. But it's also a reminder that we need to take a step back and embrace the good work that's going on in our respective fields. Josh Hermsmeyer. He's doing a killer job with airyards.com. Josh has completely revolutionized the way that fantasy players and analysts are looking at air yards. And he's just building off of what's come before him. Mike Clay, for instance, created the metric ADOT. Without that foundation, we may not yet be thinking of air yards the same way. What I'm basically saying is that there are loads and loads of people who continue to push and innovate in the fantasy football industry. And as an analyst in the field, the only word to use to describe it is humbling. People are doing better work than I am. People are coming up with cooler stuff than I am. And because of those people, I'm working my ass off. And I love those people for it. So Don, thanks for the reminder. Thanks to your ignorant rant, people understand even more why the analytical side of this football equation exists. Because teams shouldn't be run by buffoons who think numbers-driven people have no place in football. Anyway, today is a mailbag day, so there are questions that we've got to get to. Before digging in, though, I wanted to send a quick note that with the NFL season here, remember that you can catch all the games on TuneIn and the TuneIn app. At home or on the go, listen to the home call of every game live, or pop in and out of the action every Sunday with NFL First and Goal. That's TuneIn's audio red zone station. Download the TuneIn app today and listen to the NFL for free for 30 days. TuneIn is your everything audio app. Now let's dig in. This first question is from Kyle. He says, "Hi JJ, we can and obviously should talk a lot about reactionary waiver wire moves after we lose a guy like David Johnson or Greg Olsen. But what waiver wire strategies should we use if our teams are doing well? More specifically, what metrics, trends, or situations are we looking for in order to already have a worthwhile stash on our bench versus having to blow our fob fighting for a guy the week after he breaks out? All the best from Toronto, Canada, Kyle." Now, as a lot of you know, I was high on Buck Allen entering the season because of situation. Terrence West was one of the lower-tiered starters at running back in the league, in my opinion, making that situation an easier one to target. Now, obviously, the Danny Woodhead injury made Buck Allen a great PPR asset, but that same process should be used throughout the entire league. Which situations are muddied? Where is there a backfield where a starter doesn't have to get hurt for someone to emerge? I mean, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back or anything here, but it's another reason that I liked Chris Carson entering the season. You can go back and listen to old podcasts. It's the same process over and over and over and over again. You're targeting players who are buried on their depth charts, but they're buried on bad depth charts. I'm seeing which starters are underperforming, and I'm looking at who's behind them. This is especially true at running back, because it's easiest for running backs to step in for the starter and see a significant workload. And sometimes it's about buying players in those situations too. That's a big reason that I'm looking at Joe Mixon this week in trades. Because he's the best running back in that backfield this season. He's the most talented guy in that backfield. They just changed head coaches, and buying him right now shouldn't be that hard. From a numbers perspective, at the highest level, you should always be looking at volume, snap rates, and touchdown regression for which players are underperforming and overperforming. And of course, you want to associate your players in good offenses. As for your first question of how to handle the waiver wire when you're a winning team, you should handle it pretty similarly to if you're a losing team. Maybe you won't be as aggressive, but a good running back off the waiver wire will help any team, whether that team is good or bad. It's a valuable asset in fantasy football. So don't overthink it. Play the wire as you would. This next one comes from Gabor. "Hey JJ, I'm playing in two leagues this year and I'm 2-0 in both of them. Listening to you for years has huge merits in that. So thanks for your great work and dedication. Also, thanks for all the guys at NumberFire." Thanks, man. "I have a question about my more exciting league. Because my team had been 1-0 and had had the best score, I ended up last in waiver priority. I had Kareem Hunt and I had pretty good depth at running back, so I picked up my best handcuff, Charcandrick West. Was it too soon? You're always talking about opportunity costs for bench players like this, but I don't feel like I'm wasting any here. I'm willing to throw him back if a great opportunity comes, for example, if a free agent pops up after the waiver period is over for this week, but because of the fact that in this league there are no miracles, which means that a good player won't fall to one of the last guys in waivers, I don't think I'm wasting opportunity by keeping him on my bench, especially because I'm still going to mark him as the droppable player for my waiver claims. What do you think? Cheers from Hungary, Gabor." Hungary, that's awesome. Thanks for sending that in. Two things I want to talk about with this question. The first is that, yes, I think it's fine to grab a handcuffy type player when you have no one else to roster on your bench. What good is Tyler Boyd doing sitting on your bench? He doesn't have upside, but at least a handcuff does. So I get it. We have a clearer picture of handcuffs today than we did during the draft, which is a key reason why you shouldn't be drafting them, but adding them as the season goes on. The second point I want to make, though, is choosing which handcuffs to own. This is more of a game theory thing. Since you're 2-0, you may want to play it safer. You probably should hold on to someone like Charcandrick West. But if you're 0-2, you need upside. So instead of handcuffing your own running back, handcuff someone else's. Get James Conner if you're not the Le'Veon Bell owner. Overall, though, the point is to use your bench spots for upside. And if you're starting the season off well and your roster looks good, handcuffing is fine. But that's with the insight that your team is good, which is not something we knew back in August when you drafted it. This next question is from Marco. "Hi JJ, I was wondering how you would go about dealing with running back depth. Listening to you, I have added Samaje Perine, Chris Carson, and Buck Allen. I also have Doug Martin waiting. Would you try packaging a couple up in a trade or wait until someone on my team gets hurt or underperforms? I don't think my depth has enough value right now, but don't want to wait until they possibly fade out and lose value. Just want to know how you would deal with this. I have Christian McCaffrey and Mike Gillisley as my starters, looking to possibly upgrade. Thanks, JJ. Marco. So Marco, in fantasy football, I think you should always be thinking about how you can improve your starting lineup. Running backs are a valuable asset, so packaging up a starter with one of the guys on your bench is always a good idea if you want to upgrade your starting running back position. So yes, that's what I do. Maybe trade Chris Carson or Buck Allen with Christian McCaffrey for a better running back to a running back needy team. And that's a key element too. Trade with teams who need your assets, but I'll get into that with the next question. This is from Alex. He says, hey JJ, got into NumberFire towards the end of the season and have been listening to your podcast this season. Waiting on a quarterback really paid off in my draft, I think. Great work. I'm in a 14-team standard league, so my roster is as follows. He then lists his roster, which has very strong running backs. So I obviously feel pretty happy at running back, but my wide receivers are a bit boom or bust. Would you trade one of my running backs for a more elite consistent receiver? If so, who? Thanks, Alex in the UK. Man, late round pod is going international this week. So I have a little analogy for you. Imagine going to the grocery store and you're looking for chocolate. You walk inside the store, maybe it's a Kroger, maybe it's a Harris Teeter if you live down south, maybe a Giant Eagle if you're from Pittsburgh. By the way, a low-key thing that I love when I travel is to see what the local grocery stores are called. There are some wacky names out there for some grocery stores, man. Anyway, you walk into the grocery store and you say, I've got a sweet tooth, I want me some chocolate. More specifically, I want a candy bar that has chocolate. So you go to the candy aisle and there are 20 or 30 choices of chocolate bars to choose from. As you're standing there, you say, I really want brand X's chocolate bar. I'm not creative enough to come up with a brand there. It's brand X. You grab it, you walk to the checkout, and you ring it up. And it costs $75. You stand there and you say to yourself, why would I pay $70 for a chocolate bar? Exactly, you wouldn't. That's precisely what people do in trades in fantasy football, though. Instead of thinking at the majority of the usable player pool and saying, I'd generally be okay with a lot of these players on my team, people get so hungry for one or two particular players. They choose one chocolate bar out of the 20 plus bars that are available for purchase without looking at the cost. And then when they target that player, the owner of that player really likes him too and is only going to give him up for a fortune. This is why I said that sure, you can go buy low on certain players, but it also is under the assumption that those players' owners are low on that player too. You shouldn't go into trade negotiations looking for particular players. You should go into them searching for teams who need your player. Like, if I'm trying to sell Jaquizz Rodgers right now, why on God's green earth would I sell Rodgers to a team that has Ezekiel Elliott, Le'Veon Bell, and Kareem Hunt? That person does not need a running back. Yes, trade depth. Yes, make deals. But don't go into a potential trade with a narrow viewpoint. But like I said, there are guys that you can buy low on. I write them up in my 15 transactions column each week, and then I podcast about it on this very show. I think listening to those or reading the 15 transactions column will help in instances like this. You can go to those owners and say, how do you feel about AJ Green right now? Because you know that you want to buy him low. But if they say, I think AJ Green is a top three wide receiver from here on out, then you shouldn't probably target AJ Green. This next one's from Twitter, at KDBanks01. Would you rather have Willie Snead or Babytron rest of season? Thanks. I'd rather have Willie Snead. People were kind of shocked when I answered this on Twitter the other day, but it's really not that hard of an answer in my opinion. You guys know that I love Babytron, but he's definitely more of a dynasty asset first and foremost, and he has less value this year as a player. He may provide flex appeal, and the hope is that he sees more snaps and steals more from Marvin Jones, but he's their number three receiver in that offense. Willie Snead is a better quarterback, he's in a better offense, and he has averaged over 100 targets per season since joining the Saints in 2015. Kenny Golladay won't see as much volume as Willie Snead. Babytron may have more upside long term, and I think that he definitely has more upside long term. You guys know that I love Kenny Golladay. But this year, the answer is pretty easily Willie Snead from a process standpoint. This next one is from David. How do you feel about the leagues responsible to veto trades? Recently, Aaron Rodgers for Eli and Forte got vetoed. Most can agree that it is a bad trade, but the owner had Wentz and was interested in a running back. Should the league let this trade go through? No indication of collusion either. Thanks, David S. So I've been the commissioner of my home league for about 14 years now, and I've never once vetoed a trade. It's arrogant to veto a trade. Just because a trade appears to be lopsided when it goes down doesn't mean that's how things will pan out. So no, that should not be vetoed since there's no indication of collusion. I also want to say, because I want to share this, I got another question from a dude where a trade went through, another league owner saw it, told one of the owners that was part of the trade that he had a better offer for the player that he was trading. The one guy agreed with that second trade, told the commissioner, and then the commissioner vetoed the original trade. That is so messed up on so many levels. If you're in a league and your commissioner is doing that, leave the league, or at least yell at your commissioner. And if you want, send him this podcast and he can hear it right now. But overall, if you're a commissioner, stop the vetoing. This last question is from Miles. He says, "Hey JJ, I love the great work you and your colleagues do. I've been taking notes and it's been paying off. Thank you." I appreciate that, Miles. "My question is about streaming a defense. I currently have Arizona and they did well for me last week. This week they're up against Dallas, which I think will be a tough matchup." Yeah, it's a tough matchup. "But in the next 2 weeks after, they have San Francisco and Philly, both teams I'm sure the defense will dominate. I could drop them for Miami or Philly this week, but of course run the risk of losing out next week of picking them up. If every week I could just stream a defense, wouldn't it be beneficial to stash a defense for a week or so considering who they'll be playing in the future? There are dudes who hoard defenses in our league, and I think that's stupid, but is it stupid to do it for a short period of time? Thanks, your loyal listener, Miles." I think this is a question that a lot of people have, and the best answer that I can give is that it depends on the size of your bench. It goes back to what I talked about earlier. If you have a stash on your bench doing nothing or a player with no upside, you can certainly plan ahead and pick up a defense for that player. Drop the player who's rotting on your bench. I definitely do this at times. And I want everyone listening to this to do a general walkthrough of your league to see how owners are managing their squads. Are they hoarding quarterbacks, defenses, tight ends? Those answers can then help you see how viable streaming actually is. That's the thing. Streaming is viable in most formats, but there are some where it's not. And then people get mad online at me. And I'm not saying that this is you, Miles, because it's not. You're the man. Because streaming doesn't work in their league. "Not in my league," they'll say. I get it. It's not always a viable option. That's why I devoted an entire podcast this offseason to understanding your league. That's the absolute first thing that you should do or should have done before drafting your team, and it's something that you should always be monitoring as the season goes on. So in short, yes, you can hold on to a second defense. That happens sometimes when you're streaming. But in leagues where there are always defenses available, I don't think it's necessary. I think in this case, you might be able to drop Arizona. That's it for the questions, though. Thanks again for tuning in. If you've yet to subscribe to the show, do so by going to iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google Play. And as I've been mentioning, if you leave a rating and review on iTunes, you'll automatically be entered for a chance to win a NumberFire premium subscription for an entire year. I'll be drawing a name at random at the end of this month, so please do that as soon as you can. You can also follow me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB, and if you have any questions for next week's mailbag show, you can send them to that handle on Twitter or email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy your weekends, and enjoy week 3.